Abby Feeder, certified life and fertility coach, and you're listening to The Fertility Check. This show is all about the path to parenthood, which is never the same for everyone, and our guests' professional success along the way. Did you know that there's an organization in LA called Maternal Mental Health Now? Do you know that this organization should be all over the country? This incredible organization is focusing on educating and surrounding and supporting and building up women going through pregnancy loss, infertility, all the maternal mental health aspects of postpartum that come in, which is vast, let's just say. And I think it's so important to amplify their voice because what they're doing is a miracle. They're holding their annual fundraiser coming up in May. I would love to see you there. I will be there. It's going to be an incredible night of storytelling. So I can't wait for you to hear our guest today. Kelly O'Connor is the executive director of Maternal Mental Health Now, and she has so much to share. Here's Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Abby. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about where you work, which is Maternal Mental Health Now.
Sure.
So why don't you tell me how you ended up there and maybe the origin story of the organization?
I ended up at Maternal Mental Health Now thanks to a job ad. And I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay.
First, I'll tell you about the organization. It was founded in 2007 by Kimberly Wong following her experience with severe postpartum depression. She had her baby and returned home from the hospital, and she knew that something was really, really wrong. And she called her OBGYN for help. And he dismissed her concerns. He said, "You're just a type A personality. You need some rest. You need to relax. You'll be fine." And she wasn't fine. Her husband describes having to hide the knives in the house out of fear that she would hurt herself. Mm. She was hospitalized two separate times for suicidality. And then the care that she received in the hospital setting was less than ideal. And she was separated from her baby. She had a long road to recovery, but ultimately she did recover. And upon her recovery, she thought to herself, "If I had so much trouble accessing resources available for me, for my mental health during my postpartum period, and I am well-educated, I've got a good job with good health insurance, got a supportive husband and family members, I have a car to like drive myself to therapy appointments, and I speak English. If I didn't have any one of those resources, what would I do in my situation?" So she started cold calling people, friends, friends of friends, members of her care team. She started cold calling people at different county departments, like County Public Health, Department of Public Health, Department of Children and Family Services, Department of Mental Health, and so on. And she convened these meetings of volunteers who are all dedicated to doing something about this issue. And that's how we were founded. At the time, we were called the LA County Perinatal Mental Health Task Force.
Wow.
And it was a decision. It's a mouthful. It was a decision made at that time to not do direct service, but instead to try take a systems change approach and try to change the system of perinatal mental health care in LA County with an emphasis on those that are most vulnerable. So we were set up to, and originally we were doing mostly trainings. So we developed a training curriculum on what perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are, what are their signs and symptoms, what are the treatment options, how do you screen, and went around asking organizations and entities to give us an hour of their time and we'll train your providers for free, your staff members for free. And that's still very much a large part of what we do is training anyone from a children's librarian that facilitates a toddler story time to OBGYNs who can prescribe medication to their patients. We train them on the same things, but we adapt those trainings depending on who we're talking to. So for the librarian, the training's about this is the issue area, this is why it's important, and here's how you start a conversation with someone that you think might be struggling. Mm. And for OBGYNs, the training is on medication management. These are medications that are safe to prescribe during pregnancy or postpartum. This is the risk-reward ratio, methods of titration. It's very, very clinical. And everything.
So who's doing the trainings?
I have a director of training named Anna King, who is a licensed social worker, and she's received her certification in perinatal mental health. And then she's supported by a faculty of experts in the field. So we have reproductive psychiatrists on that faculty. We have other mental health clinicians. We have people who work within county departments, within Department of Children and Family Services, for example. So depending on who the audience is that we're training, we'll pull from that group of faculty members and ask them to.
Amazing. Okay, so now tell me about the job ad.
Right. So I had just moved to LA County about 9 months before. And upon my arrival in LA, I found out I was pregnant. So I had just given birth to my daughter and for my firstborn. And I was contemplating a return to work. And I saw this job ad on Craigslist. And they were the LA County Perinatal Mental Task Force was hiring a part-time work from home development manager. And that was my background. My professional background was in fundraising. So I submitted a resume. I remember going on their website, a very long URL.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. It's an amazing group of people, really smart, driven, motivated, passionate. I was like, they need a new website.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think I can help them. So I submitted my resume and I was interviewed and I got the job. And that first year on the job was just me and our executive director. Her name was Karen Post. She's a clinical psychologist. And I remember it was really a crucial period of time for the organization because it was just the two of us and we were growing. Mm-hmm. And today, so I'm 13 years into that. My daughter's 13. We have a staff of 7. Our budget's over $1 million. So we've grown a lot since then. But what was so cool about finding that job at that time in my life was because I was probably, unbeknownst to me, in the throes of a mild postpartum depression. My daughter was about 3 months old when I started. And I'd go on to have 2 more kids. I'd go on to have an ectopic pregnancy. Mm. My sister, when I was pregnant with my second child, my sister lost her firstborn 6 hours after birth. I went through a divorce. That was probably related to mental health issues during pregnancy and postpartum. I've been through a lot personally that are related to the act of getting pregnant, giving birth. And the whole time I had this community by my side of healthcare providers, of my colleagues, staff members, people in the network who were so knowledgeable about the different things I was going through, so supportive, so passionate. I just felt like I had a resource. Mm-hmm. I have a community that I could lean on during all of those challenges. And so that's my vision, is that everybody in LA County has access to the same community that I did.
I love that. Well, let's talk about your ectopic. That was your second pregnancy?
It was. No. It was actually my fourth. I had an early miscarriage before I had my daughter.
Okay.
And then I had a successful pregnancy with her. And then I had my son, but he came a lot later than I had planned or anticipated or I wanted to. I actually had a diagnosis of secondary infertility with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what it's called, but that thing where they put dye in your fallopian tubes in your uterus.
An HSG, hysterosonogram, yes. Basically. I'm saying it wrong too, but we'll put the right spelling into the notes.
I remember that clearly. And then meeting with a fertility doctor and them going through the shots and
hysterosalpinogram. Thank you. Just came to me. Go ahead. I had to say it.
Perfect. And I remember my husband at the time was like, no, we're not doing that. So in the end, I just pursued acupuncture and 9 months of acupuncture and drinking those like nasty, nasty teas. Really tastes so bad.
Yeah.
I was pregnant with my second. And after that, I had an IUD put in, but in hindsight, it was probably put in too soon after delivery. Because I got pregnant and I was on vacation. I was having my first like girls trip following child, you know, having these two kids. I had sort of a kind of a last minute decision I went to Hawaii to visit my cousin and travel around the big island with her and her sister and her sister's husband for like 5 days, like a long weekend. And throughout the weekends, I was having severe stomach cramps that would come and go. But by the final day I was there, my cousin's husband is a family medicine doctor. And I remember saying, I don't feel good. I'm going to skip dinner. And I was lying down and he was like, let me feel your stomach. And he pressed on it and I like cried out in pain when it came back up. And he was like, that's called rebound pain. I think you should go to ER. So I did. Oh. And they were like, congratulations, you're pregnant. And I was like, okay. Like that was welcome news to me. But then it was like, but we're not sure if it's viable. And so what happened was they diagnosed it as an ectopic. And they had surgery, had emergency surgery then and there.
In Hawaii?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And so they found, they removed the fallopian tube and they had to, apparently they had to like dig far and deep to find the IUD. Mm. They had perforated my uterus. Mm. Right. So that's why it didn't work. That's why I got pregnant. It wasn't necessarily causal, but it was probably correlated that why the pregnancy was ectopic. So I remember being post-surgery in the postpartum floor. It's in my own room, but I could hear the babies crying in the neighboring rooms. And I remember thinking, this isn't right. Like, this isn't cool. Because what if that was a very much wanted and expected pregnancy? What if I had been trying for that pregnancy for months and years? But I also knew, okay, I'm going to call Karen. I'm going to call so-and-so. We're going to talk and I'll be okay. Again, I remember having the mindset, like, something's weird about this and I'll be okay.
Wow. Let me go back also, and then we'll move forward, I swear. But let's go back to your first loss before your firstborn. So that's more than 13 years ago. What was the climate like in terms of, like, did you know other people that had had a miscarriage? Had you talked about it with anybody?
No. I was so unfamiliar with this field. And I am fortunate that my sister is a midwife. So she is sort of a women's health expert and, like, you know, loves to geek out about women's health. I do have that resource available to me, but outside of her, it's not something that was discussed amongst my friend group or my professional colleagues or my family even. All my friends were sort of on a similar timeline as me in terms of marriage and getting pregnant and having kids. And I remember my very best friend from childhood getting pregnant about 3 months before I did. And then I started bleeding about 6 weeks in and not knowing what it was, and or coming to the conclusion that it was a miscarriage, and just feeling really, like, robbed of the opportunity and jealous of my friends that had no problems getting pregnant. They were like, let's start trying. And then bam, they were pregnant. And it was also wasn't straightforward. Like, I think I bled for about 6 weeks. And also thinking, what's up with this? I thought it would just pass and, like, we would move on. But I kept waiting and waiting and waiting for it to clear so that we could try again, and being frustrated by that too.
I think that's one of the biggest myths of miscarriage. I actually just wrote a piece about this that I also thought, it's like, oh, you diagnosed with having a miscarriage, you bleed a lot, and then the next day you move on. You figure yourself out emotionally and you start trying again, right? But it can be weeks and weeks and weeks of waiting. And I've said before, there is a special kind of torture in waiting to be unpregnant when all you want is a baby and you're just waiting to be unpregnant so you can start over again. It's such, for lack of a better term, a mind fuck.
I agree. So I just think that pregnancy, trying to get pregnant, pregnancy, the postpartum period is a minefield. There's so many things that could go wrong and no one talks about it before, you know, my experience.
Yeah.
So I think part of the solution is just to bring light to all these different things that can go wrong and also understand it's not straightforward.
Yeah. Let's move to your sister really quick. She experienced a devastating loss of a baby that she had birthed. Was there any indication, and it's her story, I don't expect you to, like, share anything intimate about it if you don't want to, but was it a complete shock that that happened, or was it a possibility?
No, it was a possibility.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy to share, like, her story through my perspective, right? Yeah. Again, she got pregnant with her first child about 3 months ahead of me getting pregnant with my second, but I had been trying, right?
Yeah.
And I remember she went in for her 10-week, like, blood work. And she got results that maybe the baby had Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And she felt relieved because she was scared that the baby was going to have trisomy, whatever the number is, or something that incompatible with life.
Yeah.
So I remember her being so relieved, but also me, I was just pregnant at that time. And I felt really actually guilty that she had that diagnosis, even though she was okay with it. And I remember going to my, like, individual meeting with my boss at the time and just breaking down into tears. And then we did not have a staff meeting. We had, like, a therapist. And I was just like, okay, talk to us, what's going on. But I didn't disclose to her that I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So when that came out later, she was like, oh my gosh, that's why you had such a big reaction.
Yeah.
So yeah, she had that diagnosis at 10 weeks. And then probably in the late 20 something weeks, she went in for a regular ultrasound and was diagnosed with low fluid. Which they figured was as a result of the lack of the kidney development, I think, and of the fetus. The result of low fluid is a lack of lung development. So after that, she was, like, in the hospital for the weekends. After that was just extra monitoring and was admitted to hospital for bed rest and monitoring, like, around maybe 34 weeks. And she delivered probably around 36 or 38 weeks. And yeah, we knew that there was a potential that the baby would not survive or that the baby would be in NICU for a long time. But we all hoped otherwise. Right. So the baby came And I got the call around midnight on a Friday that she was in labor. And by 6 a.m. the next morning, I was on a plane. She lives in Connecticut, across the country. So me and my daughter got on a plane. But when we had a layover, and when we landed, we learned that the baby hadn't survived. But we continued on to Connecticut. And like the next week was like a wake and a funeral. I read something at the cemetery for the funeral. And it was hard, to say the least.
Yeah.
She experienced pretty severe grief, obviously. And because I was pregnant, that reminded her of what she didn't have. So like the next few months that followed, she sort of had to push me away and keep her distance from me. And I understood, but it still hurt, you know? Ultimately, I gave birth to my son and had some complications in the hospital. And she did call me, like I could tell she was like digging deep, like to make that phone call and wish me congratulations. She pursued therapy, support groups. She found this really great resource where she lives called Hope After Loss. Mm-hmm. So it's a nonprofit with support groups for people who have had a loss, people who are pregnant after a loss, like lots of them. She got really involved with them. She worked for them for part-time. She's a midwife. She's my sister who's a midwife. So she got a new job, was basically doing prenatal visits and not like live births anymore because it was traumatic for her. And ultimately, she got pregnant again. And she now has 3 living children. And she's super busy, super overwhelmed, still working. And they all know about their big sister, Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
They have some traditions or rituals in the family.
I love that. Wow. What a story. And did you guys eventually patch things?
Yes. We're all good now.
Was it like a slow back together just in your own time?
So.
Or, yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I put it together. It was about 10 years. It was 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What you always wanted is like that overwhelmed mom. It's busy and crazy. But
wow.
Okay. It.
So back to you. You have surgery in Hawaii. And then you did ultimately have a third, right?
Yeah. So I come back from Hawaii and I didn't know what sort of birth control to go on after that. I didn't trust IUD. I didn't want to do birth control pills. So ultimately I wasn't using any birth control, just, you know, abstinence or the Allender method, right?
Sure.
But there was one night, one too many glasses of wine and one fallopian tube later, we had sex and it was unprotected. I remember the next morning being like, no, like it's not going to happen, right? But then, right. Sure enough,
the one tube. You're like, I have one tube.
Yeah. What are the chances? Like, pretty poor. But 2 to 4 weeks later, however, like my period didn't come, and I took a test. And
wow. So, how old is your youngest?
He's 7.
Okay. And how soon after the youngest did you and your partner split?
I'm doing the math. I think it was about 1.
Okay, so like at least 5 years ago.
Yes.
Okay.
That was when it was a longer, long drawn out process, but that was the beginning.
Of course. Okay. Here's the thing. We all know that prenatals and all supplements and vitamins are not created equal. I love the brand WeNatal. They are revolutionizing the fertility space and they have created the cleanest, most comprehensive prenatal formulas for both men and women. That's right, for both men and women, hence the name WeNatal. I wish I had them when I was trying to conceive. Unlike most prenatals on the market, which basically have about 12 nutrients each, WeNatal has 24 at research-backed amounts. So for example, 4,000 IU of vitamin D, that is not found in most prenatals. They include nutrients that other prenatals leave out, like methylated vitamins, choline, and iron. You would think you might have to take a million pills for this, but you don't. They fit it all into just 3 pills a day. Keep in mind that men and their sperm are half of the equation here. 50% of sperm are responsible for miscarriage, conception rates, pregnancy outcomes, and the health of a future baby. Even if you or your partner are not trying to conceive, WeNatal formulas can be taken as a multivitamin. Y'all know I'm way past my postpartum period and I still take WeNatal every day and I tell you, I feel the difference. Also, if you're not trying to conceive, but you ultimately want to, it's a great insurance policy for when the time does come. Of course, they're offering an exclusive deal to all my listeners that you won't find on any other podcast. It's a free Omega DHA fish oil with any new subscription. It's a $34.95 value. Just use my link to grab this freebie, wenatal.com/fertility check. I am telling you, you are going to love it. I would love for you to share, just because we've never really gotten into this, like, what was it like to go through a divorce with three kids? I mean, I feel like the fear, I feel like so many people stay in it because of the kids. I think it's very brave that, and the right thing when you don't, because that's never going to help the kids more. I come from a family of divorced parents, which like was definitely the best decision for each of my parents. And I'm very, they each remarried to the right person. So I'm really, I'd love to hear your sort of thoughts at that time and maybe how you've processed it now.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been with my ex-husband since we were 21. We met senior year of college and I was young. Yeah. Like I did not have the life experience I have now and like, nor the ability to, you know, I found someone, felt good, felt right. And there was this sort of like path in my mind, but like what's supposed to happen next. And that's what I pursued. And I didn't really have the presence of mind. I'm not sure what to call it, but like, I wasn't critical about like, is this the right person for me? Mm-hmm. Things were great until we had kids. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, we both had our own jobs. We had some financial security and disposable income. We traveled. We lived abroad for a period of time. We enjoyed life and mm-hmm. things were great. But I did want to have a family. I'm the oldest of five kids. I have lots of cousins. I always thought I would have a big family. And that was something that we didn't necessarily align on, right? So which mm-hmm. one, like in hindsight, maybe I should have thought about that a little bit
more. Sure. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Right. So we, he actually took a very like big left turn in his career. And in 2010, we left New York City and moved to LA so he could pursue a business opportunity in LA. And our conversations around that, I was like, but I want to have a family. Like how do these two things align? And it's like, we can do them both. And I was like, okay. So that I landed in LA and pregnant. And following the birth of our daughter, we went through a hard time and we landed in couples counseling. Mm-hmm. And then following the birth of our son, and then, you know, we get back into like a groove. And then we had a second kid. And after his birth, we landed in couples counseling again.
Which P.S. there's absolutely nothing wrong with. And like,
no,
right. I know you know that, but you don't have to have gone through the trauma in some way of birth to go to couples therapy. Like it's the best. If anyone has access to it, I'm all for it.
I would suggest going before.
No matter what. Exactly.
Or even if, to just maintain, like what I learned is our communication skills weren't good. We didn't have the right communication skills. I also learned that, you know, I grew up in an Irish Catholic family, five kids. Like if you had any feelings, like they were meant to be dealt with in your room behind closed door.
Yes.
Like they were not, I was not invited to share or process with my parents or my brothers and sisters. It was like, that belongs over there. Yeah. And I found that level of familiarity and comfort in my ex-husband, mm-hmm. right? So, and I think the act of childbirth and bringing a family brings up a lot of feelings. And I just didn't feel like I had a safe place to express mine or the right tools, communication tools to do so in a way mm-hmm. that I would get the response that I was looking for. Right. Mm-hmm. So, hence couples counseling and third kid, same thing happened. There's another factor in this was substance use and drinking. I think he has some mental health challenges like that predate meeting me. Mm-hmm. But as we were in a relationship, like he self-medicated through drinking, mm-hmm. That became an issue on the table as well. And ultimately that's what there was an incident. It was a straw that broke the camel's back. And I mm-hmm. just decided like, this is not working for me anymore. I gave it one last ditch effort after that incident, 5 months more couples counseling. I didn't feel like he was properly like fully engaged in that. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I remember, I think the date of our separation is the same date that my brother got married. Because he got married in California. And so my whole family was flying in. It's a big family event. And I just didn't want him to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't want him to go. So I took the kids. They were in the wedding. And we went on our own. And that was after that. And I am glad that I continued working. Like throughout my marriage, right? But there's a lot of regrets as well, right?
Yeah. I feel like, yes, regrets, but you have put yourself in such a good, you've built a beautiful life for yourself, which isn't to say that women can't do that without being in a relationship. But I think so many are scared to take the leap because they feel the need to do it in partnership. Mm-hmm. And I think it sounds like having your community around you from work was probably part of giving you that strength, whether you chose it or not. It was like a meant to be community for you.
Definitely. They did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had moves like prior to the divorce, which is, I think in hindsight, it was probably like, oh, if we just move, things will be better.
Right.
You know, less such effort. So, and in the divorce, I have to stay here in my, and I wanted to move back to mm-hmm. Los Angeles, like proper, but it just wasn't part of the deal.
Yeah.
And so I felt kind of isolated. I had my work colleagues and my work community, but there's a little bit of a distance there. And so then at one point I just decided, okay, this is what it is. Like I accepted that I would be here. And also my family lives, they all live on the East Coast now. So I'm separated from them. I have to build my own community here. Mm-hmm. Self. And I think I've done that pretty well.
Yeah.
It's definitely, it's hard to make friends
as a grown adult, up.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's what everyone says and all the therapy says, like, you got to fill your own bucket, find the things that you enjoy doing, put yourself out there, do it. The friendships will come. The support circle will grow and build. And that, yeah, that's what I've done. So like I joined a CrossFit gym and like a lot of my friends where I live come from that community, found my divorce attorney, you know,
from that.
And then there's, you know, I volunteer at the kids' school. And I just, even if they're not friends, like I know if I need to get like a kid from point A to point B, there's like three people I can call. Yeah,
community's everything, right? Yeah. That's our village.
Right.
I feel like the divorce community is similar to the infertility community in that it's like worst club, best members. So finding people, right? You don't want to be in the divorce moms club or the infertility club, but when you do, those become your people in such a deep way. And, you know, a piece of advice my husband gave me when we were on our journey, which I had never heard and now I've heard a million times, and I didn't realize it was kind of looked at as a cheesy thing, but it really resonates with me, is a reason, a season, or a lifetime. People come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And so with the infertility community, I feel like much like the divorce community, like that's your season of divorce. You find your divorce community, worst club, best members, and they help you carry through, you know?
Yeah.
So true. So let's talk about, I want to talk about the maternal mental health now. Event, big event. You do an annual event. Let's talk about it. I went
sure.
last year.
Yeah, no,
it was a gala last year.
It was a gala last year. Yes. Historically, it's been a gala. I think we've done about 10 galas, which is just a traditional nonprofit, like rubber chicken dinner, right? You arrive, it's a cocktail hour.
And somebody has went to it. I would give it a little more credit than that. But yeah. Sure. Thanks. I get it's like a little formulaic, but it's meaningful and warm and entertaining. And there's a wonderful mix of people. And there's a lot of good to say about it too.
Yeah, no, it's 10 years of doing it the same. It was the same formula, though,
yeah.
Right? Like
right. Formula,
cocktail
sure.
hour, silent auction, honorees, presentation of awards, sit down dinner, and some maybe some music and entertainment thrown in there. I do think, yes, it's for the organization. It's pretty much our sort of flagship event to bring people from different walks or parts of the organization together and celebrate. And so the amount of heart in the room year after year has been incredible and noteworthy. But as an organization, we're on a path as well. We want to make the event more accessible to people. We want to demonstrate our commitment to equity in like everything that we do, including the gala event. We want to have fun and celebrate joy and like not for it to be so formulaic. So this year we are really changing it up. We're calling it the Express Yourself Bash. It's being held at Boomtown Brewery in downtown LA, which is a very raw and industrial space. So no more like hotel ballroom.
Yes, I love that.
But we also made the decision to, it's going to be the culminating event of our sex and perinatal mental health conference. So the conference is being held on Wednesday and Thursday, and then the bash is being held on Friday in the same area, in the same vicinity. I'm so hoping to like leverage, you know, people from the conference can come to the events. And the sex and perinatal mental health conference is exploring issues related to perinatal mental health during, you know, and pleasure. Or postpartum sex, or polyamory, or even we have a session on microdosing, all related to sex and like the broadest definition of its word, right? So we kind of wanted to keep some threads going in the Express Yourself Bash. So it's going to be more of a cocktail hour, cocktail party, not a sit-down dinner, although there will be seats available. We will have some storytellers share their, you know, storytelling, their curated stories, whether it's from The Crow or from another, mm-hmm. another event or another experience. And we're going to have some drag performers.
Yes, dancing. I love it.
And then we'll have a dance party. So DJ and dance party. That's something that we planned to do last year. We completely ran out of time because people were taking too long.
Right.
Our main goal is people to come and celebrate and really just experience, like, come as your true authentic self, whatever that might be, dress to express, and then just have fun. And like, we want people leaving that event, like, experiencing, like, being, you know, on cloud nine, like, just being.
I just love that. It's so good because you don't associate maternal mental health now with leaving with that, like, woohoo, that sort of worn out feeling like you just left it all on the dance floor. And I just love envisioning that with you. I will definitely be there. I can't wait. And if you are local to LA or if you want to fly in for this fantastic event, I will link out to where to find the tickets. But I think it's going to be really special.
And Friday, May 3rd.
Yes, Friday, May 3rd. Thank you. Friday, May 3rd. And just speaking of the Crow, we were just able to participate together in this incredible storytelling show at a comedy club called The Crow in Santa Monica. Can we just talk a little bit about how that came to be? Because there was a grant involved from the city of LA. And you and Nicole Blaine, who runs the Crow, in an incredible, like, star aligned magic of, like, a storytelling class and then performance. And I'm just curious how that all came to be. Like, I've heard Nicole's side of it. I would just love to hear how you guys developed it together.
Yeah. So Nicole and I used to be neighbors, and I would see her when I was walking my dog around the block. And then her younger son is the same age as my oldest daughter, and they were in preschool together. So kind of got to know her that way. And I kind of got into, like, I'm a big fan of comedy, and she's the one who kind of piqued my interest in comedy. So at some point, she's told her story different events that Maternal Mental Health Now has put on.
Yeah.
One event was a story hour. It was a storytelling event. And I just was thinking through the people we knew, and I was like, I think Nicole has a story, and this is what she does. So let's, like, I invited her to do that. And the other event was our first sex and perinatal mental health conference, which was several years ago. And she shared a very personal and vulnerable story, but in a moving, but also sometimes funny, sometimes entertaining way. Right. And she's
her
a master of her craft. Yeah. She's great. So she opened the Crow 2 years ago, and so proud of what she's done there. Like, she's programming every week. She's a staff, a 501c3. Like, there's so much going on there. It's so exciting. I'm only bummed that I can't go more often, you know? And so we had that relationship established. In terms of Maternal Mental Health Now storytelling work, we've done storytelling workshops for people, or survivors, for lack of a better word, of people who have depression, anxiety, trauma, infertility, grief and loss, any hardship during the pregnancy.
I think I remember going to work for NICU moms.
Yeah.
That was powerful.
I think we did.
Or maybe you tied it with something else. It was like a postpartum, and this particular story was NICU mom.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And there's so many ways you can kind of slice and dice the experience, right? Yeah. So we've done it before. We worked with another storyteller called Melissa Bangs, who's done, like, a full day workshop where you come in, you share, like, snippets of your story, you bond and connect with the other storytellers there. And you leave with, like, the roots of a story. Mm-hmm. You don't leave with a fully crafted story. So we've done that before with success, but it had different challenges innate in that. So we have gotten this grant from the LA County. It's called the Community Impacts Art Grant. So it's underneath the LA County Arts Commission Department. This is maybe our second grant from them. And instead of pursuing that other story, given the fact that Nicole had opened the Crow and done the storyectomy project already with cancer survivors, we decided to use that grant funding to adapt the storyectomy model with postpartum or pregnancy and postpartum experience.
So good. So
it was
good.
Great.
It was so good.
How did you find out about it?
Well, it's so strange because I do come from the acting world and the storytelling world, which is how I would normally find out about it. But I found out about it because I'm on the Maternal Mental Health Now mailing list, which just goes to show I am one of those people that actually reads their emails.
Thank you.
I really do. And I saw it and I was like, this sounds like too good to be true. I did not know The Crow. I just knew Maternal Mental Health Now. I loved the title of storyectomy. So that caught my eye. And I was like, I'm just going to fill out the application. And honestly, I forgot about it. And all of a sudden they were like, you've been accepted. And it was such a thrill for me. The group that was assembled for this particular class just felt, you know, again, stars aligned. We all felt like we were meant to have each other to lean on. It ended up being quite a few fertility or infertility stories, which I loved. And I just feel very, you know, hashtag blessed that I was chosen to be a part of it. And I feel like that cohort who did that storytelling event, we are still talking to each other. We want to get together. So we are going to continue to produce stories about the traumas of motherhood and pre-motherhood for sure.
Love it. I love it. And yeah, I was just actually looking at video of Nicole, you know, the introducing the event, storyectomy, like getting your story out is an act of healing. And it's part of a healing process. It's so true. Yes. And it applies to anything, like any, particularly mental health challenges, but like cancer, having babies, anything. It's pretty incredible and moving.
And like we said before, like Nicole's a master of her craft and she is magic. She doesn't aim for you to tell, she's a storytelling teacher as well. So she walks you through the process. But what's amazing is she doesn't aim for it to be funny at all, but she does run a comedy club. And so she sees the funny in what kind of the funniness at our mortality sometimes, right? Like if we trip and fall, we always laugh when we get up because like there is that issue, like, oh my God, we could have really just hurt ourselves or died. And we laugh, right? She finds those trip and fall moments in everybody's stories, and being able to laugh about some of this brings such levity to what can be such a hard conversation, which is exactly what we need to do to get these stories out and listened to, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thankful for all of you that I'm glad that you had the experience you had, because it was not a small ask of you, like 6 weeks, 3 hours a night.
Yeah. It was great. It was great. I mean, the group was really split. Some are mothers, some are not. And for me, it was like the best reason to get a sitter or, you know, have coverage of my kids and pursue something, which I think is also a really important point because we talk about postpartum and your identity post-motherhood. Like it was a really nice forced opportunity for me to focus on me and my identity, which is not as easy, doesn't come to you as easily once you have children. Okay. Last question. I always ask everyone, is there a particular cliche or phrase or piece of advice, like a season, a reason, a life, blah, 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 that sticks with you or that you tell your kids or maybe your mom gave to you at some point?
Several. My favorite saying is no news is good news. So like the school's not calling me today. Kids are fine.
Love it.
No news is good news. Every time I go to the mailbox, I'm like, oh, no news is good news. No bills. Another thing. Yeah. So I'm raising I have a 13-year-old daughter. Yeah. That can be challenging. And so, you know, girl drama, stuff like that. So something I say is like, just because they say it doesn't make it true. Sort of a mantra.
Love that one.
Yeah. And I think just pay attention to people's actions. It's kind of related to that first one. It's like, are their actions consistent with what they're saying? Mm. These are the kind of conversations I'm having with my kids right now.
I love it. Those are really good ones. Kelly, thank you so much for being here. We hope to see many of you at this non-gala on May 3rd. And thank you for all the work you do. And thank you to Maternal Mental Health Now. What an incredible organization.
Thank you, Abby.
I love the amount of information Kelly has to share and offer. Again, please come join us at the Bash May 3rd in Los Angeles. I will be there. Along with a lot of other incredible fertility warriors and maternal mental health practitioners. I do want to acknowledge there's been some progress in Alabama, not necessarily on their current IVF law, though clinics are allowed to go back and practice IVF treatment, but they elected a Democratic female congresswoman who beat the incumbent, who literally ran on IVF and abortion rights. And she won with an overwhelming something like 62-38 majority. And I just want to say that that is another reason, do not mess with us and our female rights. I hope that she starts a huge trend and more progress is made in this area. Please, in the meantime, rate, like, follow, and review at Abby Feeder, at Encircle Fertility, at The Fertility Chick on Instagram. And maternalmentalhealthnow.org is an incredible resource and website, and they have great information on Instagram as well. See you next week.